Hey Elixir Mix fans, I'm Jamin Holmgren, co-founder of Infinite Red. I used to do a lot of Elixir back in the day, including building a content management system for Phoenix called Thesis. These days, we're a small but experienced team of 30 React Native consultants. We've been around since 2015 and have a lot of experience in React Native going all the way back to the beginning. If you're looking for expert help building, optimizing, deploying, and supporting a React Native app, I'd love to chat. Just go to infinite.red/elixirmix. And don't forget to mention that you heard about us through the Elixir Mix podcast so that we can keep sponsoring this show. Now, back to the episode.
Save on holiday favorites at Safeway. This week at Safeway, get a free Signature Farms whole frozen turkey, grade A, with a minimum purchase of $150 or more in a single transaction. Member price, limit one offer per household. Plus, get 12 ounces of Oscar Mayer bacon for $3.97 each with digital coupon. Limit four. Also this week at Safeway, Lucerne milk, half gallons, selected varieties are $2.47 each with digital coupon. Limit two. Visit Safeway.com or head in store for more deals.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Elixir Mix. Again, this week without Charles. So I'm Sasha Wolf, and this week on the panel, we have Adi Iyengar.
Hello.
And Alan Weimer.
Hello.
I hope I pronounced your both names both right. This week, we actually going to pick a topic from Twitter. Like, so a while ago, I asked on Twitter what's something people would be interested in and to hear about in Elixir Mix. And Kevin Stingen basically asked us to talk about Elixir as a general purpose language, or aka how to convince people that Elixir is not this niche thing you only reach for when you have like these super specific concurrency issues, but that it's actually something you can use in the same way, like for people reach for Rails, for example, and then you can go from there. And just before we started recording, we considered talking about this, and then we also thought, okay, let's look at like Phoenix, for example, because Phoenix is something you can get productive with quite easily. And I'd like to hear like your thoughts on that, Adi. Like, when you started with Elixir, like, how was the story there? Did you like jump into Phoenix, for example, right away? And how did it feel for you?
Yeah. Elixir for me, actually, it's my first professional like coding job was in Elixir, luckily. And yeah, I think that like kind of statement should be enough in terms of how general purpose, how easily accessible it is. I didn't really have to touch the OTP, the gen server part, or any kind of OTP stuff for like a while. I did start with plugs. At that time, Phoenix was like still, I don't know if 1.0 was out at that time, but my first Elixir app was like just a plug-based backend API. And again, just how plug looks, it's pretty straightforward to write, use, and they right away had support for Cowboy as well. So it was, again, pretty easy to follow along with the documentation and just get a server up and running within a couple hours. So yeah, I had a very pleasant experience with Elixir.
And so you said that you didn't have a lot of things to do with OTP at that point in time. Like, was there like anything specific in that first app you learned Elixir with, like where you then at some point reached for OTP? And is it like a story there to be told, or rather not?
There is definitely a story there. The app was actually replacing a small functionality of a huge Rails app. That small functionality was something that the CTO of my company at that time envisioned to, you know, kind of be more scalable. And it was an experiment for us to try writing that in Elixir. And initially we didn't do any OTP, but first thing that we did was just adding tasks to that, and then this experimented pool boy and everything. But it matured to a point where we had, with a sophisticated infrastructure, we had it in a place where, you know, we didn't not only had a great amount of concurrency with different workers doing different things, but we also were spinning in temporary infrastructure, like a super server in Google Cloud with, I think it was like, what, 128 gigs of RAM temporarily to process a huge, again, without giving a lot of business information, a huge chunk of data. And yeah, it became a pretty crazy app by 2019. But yeah, the first iteration of that in 2015 was just a simple plug REST server, no concurrency, nothing. Well, each request was concurrent, but yeah, besides that, there was no OTP whatsoever.
Yeah, that's pretty similar to my personal experience. Like, I mean, I didn't start from plug, but I jumped right into Phoenix when I first used Elixir at my previous employer. where I also like had first contact with Elixir, right? And there we also like in the beginning just had like this Phoenix app. And if you have at any point written some kind of backend code, like be it Rails, be it like PHP, Laravel, a lot of things feel very familiar. So you all this OTP stuff at that point feels a lot like magic. And but you don't have to use it like to just write an endpoint and to just get, I don't know, like a response back to the user. So I feel like there is a lot to be said about the ease of onboarding there and like not having to jump the gun on all the maybe more uncommon and maybe more weird OTP things the Beam offers, which is super powerful, but can be quite confusing for newcomers, right?
Definitely.
Like Alan, do you have like any story you'd like to share about how your first contact was with Elixir and like what you did with it?
That's a good question. I'm trying to think of what my first interaction was. I think I may share the same interaction as most people where you kind of came in from Phoenix side in that like you didn't really get too much exposure to OTP when you're using Phoenix because a lot of stuff's kind of abstracted from you. Like even I'm thinking about like when I'm first looking at the application EX file that gets created and it's not super clear like what's going on. You just have a bunch of stuff we see that gets started up, but you don't really understand exactly what's going on. You don't really see like the endpoint, all these kind of things. And yeah, and coming from Rails, like I think most people did, that I didn't really think too much about a lot of things. I just kind of try to keep things, yeah, just in line. I mean, when I started Phoenix, that was way back. We had like the web folder that was outside of the lib folder, if you remember that. That was a long time ago.
That was before my time.
Yeah. That was 1.3, I think, yeah.
Yeah, so I think I came in about 1.2 or something. And yeah, so it was a different time back then. Also, you had like, what was it? It was weird. Like you didn't have a schema, right? You had something else, like a model instead.
They called it models, yeah. It was actually models using controllers and templates, I guess, yeah. So, and I remember like one of the things that a lot of people in the Elixir community who did not come from Rails community didn't like was that, why are we calling the schemas models? So then I saw Phoenix moving away from that. I think 1.3, that's when they introduced the bounded contexts, right? The context modules that are now.
Well, I mean, the part is that it actually made it more approachable for me, at least, because I did understand MVC and they were really pushing MVC at that time, I think, like with the different folders. So that was much easier for me. And so I didn't really get too into OTP for some time. I had to spend time outside and just kind of look into it. I kept hearing about OTP and then I just had to go through like Sasha's book, little OTP book. These two books for sure were definitely my early intros to it. And then I could start to see that there's definitely some power over here. Also Dave's book from Prague was also really good too. Like the fact like I could spin off a bunch of like asynchronous processes. Thought that was super powerful. Like these things. So like, it took some time for me to really get into, you know, what I wanted to do. And after spending quite a bit of time, like getting into it, then I started actually adding it to projects for things like I had to process webhooks and you had to return response within a certain amount of time. So initially that was actually synchronous and it started taking longer and longer. And then finally we said, okay, let's try to spin off this as a process and let's just return immediately. And that definitely was amazing. It was crazy, like, because we went from like couple seconds to like now, like what is it, like 72, like that U symbol, was that microseconds? So that was,
yeah, that's microseconds. Yeah.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Black Friday is coming, and for the adults in your life who love the coolest toys, well, there's something for them this year too. Bartesian is the premier craft cocktail maker that automatically makes more than 60 seasonal and classic cocktails, each in under 30 seconds at the push of a button. And right now, Bartesian is having a huge site-wide sale. You can get $100 off any cocktail maker or cocktail maker bundle when you spend $400 or more. So, if the cocktail lover in your life has been good this year, or the right kind of bad, get them Bartesian. At the push of a button, make bar-quality cosmopolitans, martinis, Manhattans, and more. All in just 30 seconds. All for $100 off. Amazing toys aren't just for kids. Get $100 off a cocktail maker when you spend $400 through Cyber Monday. Visit bartesian.com/cocktail. That's bartesian.com/cocktail.
Yeah, that was super powerful. And then, like, we had this third party, so, like, we got a webhook, and we had to ask them, like, what happened? So we're working with Strava. Strava would send us a webhook saying, hey, this a user has an activity, and then we would reply back, hey, tell me more about the activity, and Strava would actually fall apart. It would just, like, die whenever we asked them. And so that actually brought us into another stage of OTP where if it failed, we let it crash, and we just retry it. And we actually built in like a retry mechanism too. So that was also super helpful because they were experiencing a lot of growth issues at the time. So it's really a gradual process to me that just like add in this layer, add in that layer. So it wasn't very overwhelming, but at the same time, like because of the approachability of Phoenix, especially at that time to where I was coming from, it was really straightforward, I think, for the most part.
Yeah, I think that's a very common like story, right? You start off with like air quotes, just a web app. And then you at some point say, okay, I would like some background processing, like this thing over here, it takes too long. Let's move into the background. And then like, if you would be using Rails, you would reach for something like Sidekick, but in Elixir, then OTP and like abstractions built on top of that, just in reach, right? And you can then go very naturally transition into, okay, how exactly is this supposed to work? And what can I use here? And then what guarantees does this give me? And explore basically what OTP provides you very, very gently from there.
I think the funny thing now is like, okay, you'd reach for Sidekick. There was a Sidekick implementation in Elixir. And then people said, okay, you don't need that. But now it's funny, like we're almost reaching for another Sidekick nowadays, like the Open library. Not to knock an Open. Open is fantastic, right? But it's funny that actually now we're back to doing something similar. Although now you don't have to actually add in another dependency. You don't have to add in like Redis. You just work off the same database. That's the nice part. But I was just thinking, like, it's kind of funny, like, we're necessarily almost full circle, right? It's like, okay, you don't need Sidekick, you don't need Redis, okay? You don't need, like, a background managing tool for background processes. You could just spin up a process, use a supervisor. And now it's like, okay, now let's just farm it out to Open. So it's kind of like full circle again.
Yeah, I think you can a bit of observe like the development in the community there, because I mean, Open is great if you have persistent jobs, right? Like which should survive a restart of your app, but sometimes like that's not something you need. And in the beginning, I think a lot of people were like, "Oh, OTP, and like that's cool. Like, what can we do with it?" And I mean, the other folks would probably say like, "Yeah, it's an old hat." But for the Elixir community, it was like, hey, maybe we don't need all that other stuff we used in our programming language. Let's try to do it all like in the VM itself. But now that a bit of time has passed, I guess it makes sense that we have now a solution like Open, which says, okay, like sometimes you really want this persistent queue. Sometimes you really want these persistent jobs. And while there might be solutions to doing that in the side of a VM, it's just, air quotes, simpler to use a database you're probably already using. Guess it tells a story about like the Elixir community maturing and trying to do the simplest thing.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I do. I really like the fact that Oban has become like the standard these days. Whenever I have tried to use OTP within the application I am in to store the state of jobs, it has always been hard to manage it, especially with like crashes and stuff. It's a lot easier to think of your data as separate from your app. I'm not saying it's not possible and Erlang is built for that, but it's just easier to manage things, you know, and like it won't conflict with your infrastructure and how you deploy and all that stuff, right?
Yeah, it reminds me, I think it's like in the book of Sasha Uric, there's like this table about like what you need, for example, to run like a web server and like persistence and so on and so forth, like in like a language like Ruby or Python or whatever. And it's like, okay, you have to be, there's like web server would be, for example, and the Ruby land would be like, how is it called? It's Puma, right? And then you have Rails for the web app, and then you have Redis for like the queue, and you have Postgres for persistence, and then you have Nginx for like web routing and so on and so forth. And then there's like this table on the other side, like the beam, it's like, Olympia, it's like, while it's a bit tongue-in-cheek, there is some truth to that. And I think it's interesting to see like how the community pushes in that direction. And like, so it makes sense that in the beginning you had a bunch of job queues, which we did all inside of the VM, because like, hey, this is like a direction the community tends to push because it reduces complexity. less dependencies means less complexity. But yeah, like I said before, like sometimes you really want these persistent jobs, and then it's good to have a project like Oban, which I think has been a godsend for a lot of people.
For sure. Yeah, I agree. I'm trying to remember. I feel like, I don't know if this was production or not, I do remember using Dets for a more persistent queue. We were already using the Erlang term storage, and the disk-based Erlang term storage was something I remember exploring. I'm not sure if it was in production for too long at all, because we moved to Oban very quickly after that, and which just made our life a lot simpler.
Was that something like you homebrewed in your company?
We already had a job processing thing that was already half-baked. We were using a Gen server to track that, and then we realized as it became more complicated, we needed like more like table like infrastructure, right? And then we switched to ETS, and then we realized, oh, we need this to persist beyond the application crashes and whatnot. So then we moved to DETS, and then I'm like, wait, there's this new thing called Oban. And I want to say that we did have DETS for some time in production, but very little, probably like a month or so. But it wasn't much of a effort to move from already implemented, you know, ETS to DETS.
And like for our listeners, just again, like ETS, like this with Erlang term storage, we mentioned it in a few past episodes, but it's basically like a in-memory key value table. And DETS is basically like the same thing, but it saves the contents on a file on disk. So then you actually can have persistence across restarts of your app. Just in case somebody is not familiar with it, we can like link to the docs, I guess, in the show notes.
Great. The best part about ETS is that you get to use its amazing query lookup language. I'm not sure if you've tried that, Sasha.
I have. Amazing wouldn't have been the adjective I would be using there.
I was definitely being sarcastic over here.
Yeah,
it was hell.
I mean, there are some helpers there, right? Like with fun to MS, which is like fun to match spec. So you can basically pass it like a function, and then it like somehow automatically parses these guards or these pattern matches you specify. Like that's a lot better already.
Yes, totally. Yeah.
But yeah, match specs, interesting. Let's just say that. I have written some. Yeah. Like the simple match specs are okay, but that's as soon as it gets like even remotely complex, it's even worse than regular expressions.
Agreed, 100% agreed.
But yeah, just to reiterate, I feel like there is a very natural transition to say, okay, like I want to start like my web project, right? And I just use Phoenix, and then I write some controllers, and I write some code here, and some Ecto if I have a database, and I don't have to care about ODP. But as soon as you like want to step out of that I'm not sure, like the safe zone, like this sandbox, then OTP is there, like it allows you to like reach for things beyond this air quotes simple and easy Phoenix stuff. And I must say, like my experience has been very, very positive there, because I mean I remember trying to step out of like this safe zone in other languages, like be they backend or even like front-end code. And then I feel like the experience is often that you bump into like weird walls and weird edges like you didn't expect to bump into, because like then suddenly you try to do things outside of the scope of the framework, right? Yeah. And then things become very, very hard all of a sudden without, especially like when you try to like do this for the first time and you don't really understand why things don't work as you might expect them to. I very much remember like my very first web app was actually like a PHP thing with like Laravel, and then we wanted to send like a push notification and to a bunch of users. And like I was like looking at this, and I was like thinking, okay, I'd like to do that in the background, right? Because like it might go through like thousands and thousands of devices. Right. And suddenly I was like looking, okay, then you have to start this daemon which like handles your PHP background process. And I was like, what the fuck? Why is this so hard?
Right.
And yeah, I feel like at least in that context, Elixir gives a more streamlined and a more simple solution to these common issues without you having to like really grok all the things. And like one interesting thing I noticed for myself there was, as soon as like I got like a basic understanding of OTP, I could also very much appreciate about, okay, how does Phoenix actually work, right? Like how you have one process per request.
Yeah.
And like, I feel like all the pieces like snap together. So that's pretty interesting. And like something I have not yet experienced in the same fashion in a different technology stack, but maybe like my mic, maybe something like that will pop up at some time.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. It's actually Cowboy, if I want to say. I think Cowboy itself, every request is its own process, which is, I think Phoenix just like piggybacks off of that, which is,
again,
pretty awesome. Yeah. I mean, yeah, totally right about, again, the point you made about before diving into OTP. And I mean, there's also Elixir as a community has so many cool, I mean, we haven't even touched nerves yet, but like something as simple as like the embedded Elixir engine, right? That is so powerful. Like, it can just power your anything you want to template. Like, here's an example, right? This was before I did I might have done very little OTP, but like before I delved into OTP, I wrote this DevOps like app. It basically sets up a Linux or a Mac with like all the tools I want. You know, I used to Vim, the terminal I want, Zoom, and whatever. It just, and I'm using Elixir for stuff like that. It looks weird, but it was so easy to do that because of embedded Elixir. Writing shared templates was so easy to do. And Elixir is such an accessible language. Yes, you have to figure out how to install it first. But once you install Elixir, once you got it running in a nice script, it's very powerful because its interface is like so idiomatic, right? Like it's so easy to use, like most of the libraries and the language itself.
Yeah, and the tooling, and the tooling is just superb.
Right.
And
it is Ryan Seacrest here. Everybody needs some variety in life. That's what I love about Chumba Casino. They know how to keep things fresh and exciting. All their games are free to play, like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire. You can claim free daily login bonuses, too. And they release new games every week. So spice things up with ChumbaCasino.com now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Black Friday is coming, and for the adults in your life who love the coolest toys, well, there's something for them this year, too. Bartesian is the premier craft cocktail maker that automatically makes more than 60 seasonal and classic cocktails, each in under 30 seconds at the push of a button. And right now, Bartesian is having a huge site-wide sale. You can get $100 off any cocktail maker or cocktail maker bundle when you spend $400 or more. So, if the cocktail lover in your life has been good this year, or the right kind of bad, get them Bartesian. At the push of a button, make bar-quality cosmopolitans, martinis, Manhattans, and more. All in just 30 seconds. All for $100 off. Amazing toys aren't just for kids. Get $100 off a cocktail maker when you spend $400 through Cyber Monday. Visit bartesian.com/cocktail. That's bartesian.com/cocktail.
I feel like the onboarding experience in Elixir, like even like just going through the guides on the Elixir web website, drops you off at a point where, at least for me, because I personally very feel relatively comfortable in like tackling your first Elixir app. Like not really like diving into writing like web server from scratch, right? But like really, okay, I feel like I know enough to be productive to actually build something.
Yeah.
And that I think that tells a story about where Elixir comes from, right? I mean, just look at what Jose did before Elixir. Like he was very, very active in the Ruby community. Right. And Ruby has this mantra and like this reputation and very well-earned reputation about being approachable. And about being like easy to pick up and like focusing on developer happiness. And you really see this in Elixir, that a lot of the same ideas have evolved to a certain degree, but also went into the design of this language and the design of the tooling and the design of the onboarding experience. And while still learning for maybe like some of the things which haven't worked out that nicely in the Ruby community, because I mean, a lot of people who do Elixir come from Ruby. That's just a very natural transition. And at least in Ruby, sometimes you have a situation where if you have a very big monolith, which evolved over time, then you have all these like different parts, which like magically touch each other And then it becomes very hard to reason about things. And that's like something I think you can see in Elixir, where like Jose made very, very, very deliberate design decisions to avoid some of these pitfalls. So
yeah, totally. I think one of the things that I guess I'm, again, being in a more of a unique place where I actually did Elixir before Ruby on Rails, or delivered my production app in Elixir before I did Ruby on Rails.
Yeah.
I did even Phoenix before Rails.
Yeah, that we're both the same there. I also hadn't done Ruby before I did Elixir.
Oh, awesome.
I guess all the listeners cannot tell us, like, you don't know shit.
But what I really felt was, I mean, yes, Elixir and Phoenix did feel like magic still to some extent, but a lot less magic than Ruby on Rails. Like, you have that endpoint.exe, you still have the application.exe, you still have the user channel.exe, even though you don't need to use that code, no one touches it ever, you still have this more explicitness in the interface. Also, I think by design in Elixir too, like, there you can do a lot of, it's, the metaprogramming is very powerful, but it restricts you from doing things that you shouldn't do. For example, opening up a class and defining functions that are not defined in it, right? Like Rails does that all the time. And the craziest thing you can do is like use the on definition hook, the compile time hook in Elixir, and like, you know, do something weird there. But even with that, it restricts you from defining or creating a new function.
It's very
restrictive.
I just wanted to say, like, on definition callback is actually very interesting, because like it's deliberately, like when you write it, it's deliberately a function you have to write. You can't write a macro there.
Exactly.
So you can't inject code there. You can only track something. Like, that's a very, very deliberate design decision, because I think all the other compilation callbacks are all macros. Only the on definition is a function.
Right.
And I think probably just to avoid this exactly this kind of magic behavior, which would otherwise be very hard to wrap your head around.
Totally. Yeah, I think the before compile and after compile can be both macros and functions, but you're right. Yeah, on definition can only be a function.
Yeah. So but that's like a very interesting design tidbit.
Definitely.
I feel like it's probably also something, like, you can see that somebody has made this decision probably because they have been burned by something working differently before.
Right, exactly. I think the whole, if you look at the Elixir proposals groups, school groups, you can see how protective people are of bad patterns in the community. Like, a lot of times if you suggest something that could be potentially off, you don't have to wait to see Jose's opinion. Like, so many others just bounce off and like, oh, what about this? What about that? And it's a very, very positive, involved community that's, you know, Jose has managed to create, you know, Jose and everyone else, like, where there's so many people who are just like inherently care about the language enough to actively monitor Google Groups, even without being in the Elixir core team, which is quite amazing.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Yeah, I think it's like an interesting balance, which Elixir has been striking, like, where you can get productive relatively quickly. I've seen that happen. I've seen that happen with colleagues picking up Elixir for the very first time. And like, a lot of people are like, oh, it's a functional language, I'm not sure how productive I'll be. But if you like drop them into like a Phoenix project and tell them, hey, go through the Groovy Getting Started guides of Elixir, and then just look at the code and you figure things out. My experience has been that people become a lot quicker productive than they might have expected initially, just by this being a functional language. And yeah, I mean, then we said that you have this natural transition about, okay, now I want to reach for something more. I want to do background processing. And there, the Elixir community is also very helpful. Like, if you just ask a question, the Elixir forum, people will very quickly give you an answer and help you figure things out. So yes, it's an interesting balance, which I think the core team and the community is striking between, okay, easy to onboard, but still powerful if you want it to be. One thing I wanted to say, like, earlier when we talked about Phoenix, is I agree that like Phoenix can feel a lot, quite magic when you begin with it. But what I found is when you then start to pull back the curtain, right? So and see, okay, well, what's actually happening beneath all that magic? It's not a lot, to be honest. I mean, you have like the plug pipeline, then you have to grok, okay, what's actually a plug and like how does that work, and like how do these like plug macro and so on and so forth work. But at the end of the day, it boils down to being a list of like modules, plugs, and then being invoked one after the other. and even like your router and like your controller are plugs underneath, right? So if you look at it and like find out, okay, well, how does this actually work? There is not that much magic to untangle to find out, hey, okay, this is what happens, which I found very, very surprising when I first did that.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Everything is plugs is the correct way of like explaining it. Like, yep, your router is a plug. As soon as it gets to the router, once you get to the endpoint, it is a sequence of plugs. Even the rendering of view happens in a plug. If you actually inspect your connection in after like a request test and after a controller test, it will have a Phoenix plugs attribute on it, and it will show some __ Phoenix view, something like that, and its responsibility is to render the view. It's actually pretty awesome. I'm going to use this as a shameless plug for my book.
Pun intended.
Yeah, shameless plug, right? Yeah. So if people think Phoenix is magic, like I did a while ago, I'm actually currently working on a book with Pack Publications, which teaches you how to build your own web framework in Elixir. Again, I've already talked about it once before on this podcast, but just wanted to make that plug again. So I'll keep you guys posted how it's coming. But yeah.
Yeah, maybe we can just drop a link into the show notes also if people want to check it out.
Yeah, I'm not sure if there's a link. We've only worked on
it. Oh, okay.
I'm just trying to create a little bit of hype for that.
Let me know if it likes becomes available. I'll certainly take a look at it.
Awesome.
Yeah. Anything else like we can talk about here? Anything else with like any stories left to tell?
I mean, we have essentially touched everything.
Yeah. I mean, maybe one thing left. One thing we can talk about is that I feel like just by the nature of like the runtime, the OLNVM, and like all the good work which has went into like OTP and Erlang and like being as performant and like as resilient as it is. You have this relatively straightforward onboarding experience and starting to write your app. But then at some point, like if you build a startup and your product becomes successful, right? Elixir and the runtime especially is there to like scale with you. And I feel like while of course you can also scale with different technologies. I mean, just look at GitHub, for example, which is still using Rails to this day and very successfully so. But at least from what I've seen is that Elixir can push you a lot further with less effort when compared to maybe like some more traditional technologies. And like that's a very powerful combination, right? Where I say, okay, I can start off relatively easy, of course, not as easily as Rails and like the plethora of like gems in there. So that's certainly not a position Elixir is in yet. But if you stick to like a well-worn and the well-known path, then you can go very far very quickly. And when you come into a position where you actually have to scale and where you actually have to handle different load scenarios, then the Beam and all the tools there are in your reach and can help to achieve these goals without maybe some of the growing pains which usually come in such a scenario.
That's very well said. Yeah. Elixir with less effort will help you get a lot further than something like Ruby on Rails will. Yeah.
Yeah. So this was like a little fun story, like tangentially related to that. It's like a former colleague of mine had this like little small Elixir app running in production for a while, like for a personal project, right? And then at some point, he just found out that like sometimes there were some load spikes, which like crashed a few things. But he like only found out, I don't know, like months later when he looked at the logs, because then OTP just restarted everything. So that was like a nice little experience for him, like seeing, okay, like in a different scenario, we'll probably have to jump the gun, have to, I don't know, SSH into the server and like restart things yourself and like maybe set up some monitoring and like make sure that things get restarted if they crash. And like OTP just did that, all of that for him. And he like didn't even notice until he looked at the logs. So just to give like a one little story where the runtime really delivered on some of its promises. And so yeah, if some of our listeners like I have not yet used Elixir or like feel like I don't know, like I don't want to lose Elixir is like an overkill for this app, just give it a try. There's also like I'm going to share that in the show notes. There's like a super interesting article from engineer at Spotify where they like wrote an Elixir service like as a prototype thing for some internal metrics application, which like gathered data and gathered metrics from a lot of other services inside of their infrastructure. And like he tells this interesting story also about how he used some performance tooling by the Beam, because he found out that the Elixir prototype had like a bottleneck, and he found that out very, very quickly, actually, by the tooling given through the Beam. And then at some point he put that into production, and then redirected like some percentage of the traffic to this prototype, and like the thing didn't even break a sweat. So he just went like full on crazy mode and just like redirected all traffic to this prototype, and that prototype just happily chugged along, like it just did its job. And the former thing they had running there was like a super high performance tuned Java thing, which like really like a lot of very smart people spend time on like making it as performant as possible. And then just this guy comes along and like writes this Elixir prototype, like the first time writing Elixir, and then fixes this one performance bottleneck, and boom, that just works. So I feel like that tells you a lot about how far the runtime can push you, even if you don't feel comfortable with a lot of the nitty-gritty details of ODP. So I'm going to link that in the show notes, because I feel like that might help a lot of people like maybe jump the gun and like to try it out. Right?
Yeah, that's a very, very good story, Sasha. Looking forward to reading that article. Yeah, one thing I do think, just as a negative, one thing, I think we've talked about it quite a bit, just that would really make Elixir amazing would be obviously a good type system.
Oh boy, yeah.
I think that's also a very good segue to the shout out for our next podcast. It's going to be, I think it's the next one. We're going to have Louis Pilfit, I think in our next podcast, the creator of Gleam.
Yeah, and like he's trying to bring a static type system to the Beam. And I'm very, very curious to like hear his thoughts on that.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, I guess we can wrap it up here. Or is there anything else you'd like to talk about, Adi?
I'm all set.
All right. Then let's go to picks. So, Adi, is there anything you'd like to pick for us this week?
Yeah, I have it's a relatively simple blog post, but it's very effective. It's written by one of my coworkers, Hassan is his name. And it's a very cool blog post where he shows how you can split Phoenix router into multiple modules in a more manageable way. It's important to, I think, at least read that, because I think, I know with the Rails background, Phoenix routers can tend to get huge and less manageable. So I would encourage people to give that a read. The link will be in the description.
Yeah, nice. I don't have any specific picks this week. I've been very busy like the past week with a lot of things which have been going on here in Germany, because in my part of Germany, North Rwestphalia, there have been floods last week, like insane floods, like floods of a level which has not been seen before. And a lot of houses in my neighborhood went underwater, so I spent a lot of time like helping neighbors, like just throwing away stuff from their cellar, which were completely underwater. And I just like to use this opportunity to say, hey, climate change is something which like affects all of us. And there is a lot of good work happening like in various organizations like Greenpeace or so on and so forth. And I just like ask every listener to like maybe have a chat with their parents, with folks they like, to consider climate change when the next time they go to the voting booth. Because like in September, there's like voting happening in Germany. There's an election, the general election. And if we have any listeners from Germany, I'd like to like say, okay, just remember that things like this flood is just going to become more common the further we go on the climate change scale. So I'd like to consider this the next time. I'd like to ask you to consider this the next time you cast a vote. That's all I'd like to say for this week. Okay.
Actually, I'm sorry about that. I got one more pick.
Yeah, sure. No worries.
So keeping on the EU theme, there is a ElixirConf EU happening soon. And I know they're looking for volunteers. And if anyone watching this wants to attend the Elixir conference, wants to see how it feels like, you can do it for free if you volunteer. I'm going to paste the link to the volunteering form in the description as well. But yeah, I'm giving a talk there, by the way. I'm still volunteering. I think it's a great way to contribute to the community, to help organizers of these conferences in any way possible, because they work very hard to make sure these conferences go well.
Yeah, nice. That's a good pick.
Nice.
Okay. So folks, I hope you enjoyed the episode and tune in next time when we come together for Elixir Mix.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Black Friday is coming, and for the adults in your life who love the coolest toys, well, there's something for them this year, too. Bartesian is the premier craft cocktail maker that automatically makes more than 60 seasonal and classic cocktails, each in under 30 seconds at the push of a button. And right now, Bartesian is having a huge site-wide sale. You can get $100 off any cocktail maker or cocktail maker bundle when you spend $400 or more. So, if the cocktail lover in your life has been good this year, or the right kind of bad, get them Bartesian. At the push of a button, make bar-quality cosmopolitans, martinis, Manhattans, and more. All in just 30 seconds. All for 100 off. Amazing toys aren't just for kids. Get 100 off a cocktail maker when you spend 400 through Cyber Monday. Visit bartesian.com/cocktail. That's BARTESIAN.com/cocktail.